Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair once every month or so with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. He has been in the automotive repair and service game for a long time, and he knows his stuff. So if you will have a question, now's the time to call 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or go to Facebook at WAMC Radio on Facebook. And you could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Welcome back. Thank you very much.
It's nice to have you here. I'll start the show today with a question from the big boss, Alan, who is probably listening now in the car, and I took notes. So here's the basics. He bought a new Prius, brand new, beautiful 2016 Prius.
Yep.
And he said, quote, it's got about 12 computers on it, which are very confusing. His first question is, how do you turn off the navigation voice? Because the woman is driving him crazy.
Is she nagging?
Yeah. Well, is she nagging? Well, I guess a little bit.
You'd have to go in there and see what the format is. I mean,
okay, so you don't know offhand.
I don't know. I haven't experienced that car and that system.
Yeah.
But I think I was listening to you and Alan talk about that. Was it during the fun drive?
Possibly. I blocked most of that out.
Didn't you offer to go out and see what you could do?
Oh, no, because I think he just got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I'll do. I'm going to pass this on to you because, you know, you're pretty tech savvy with iPhones and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'll bet you can figure that out.
I just won't hit the self-destruct button on it and we'll be all right.
There you go.
Okay, the other one is a more general question. So when a car, let's say a Prius, is finally out of warranty, his question, and it's a good question, can you bring it, do you have to continue to bring it to the dealer for service just because of the specialization of all the systems on board?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we do have a few hybrids that we service. And the hybrid part of the vehicle is so good, and they seem to have so few problems that we don't encounter much. And when they're that specific, they generally go to the dealer.
Yeah.
The car still has tires, brakes, steering components, all the usual things that can wear are still present in those cars. They do need oil changed. The engine has a drive belt. So there's a lot of things on there that still need the normal maintenance items.
But I guess his question was, in this age of specialization, and some dealers will have equipment that is very expensive for the independent person to buy, are there some jobs that you just have to go to the dealer for?
Yes, because of the technology and the equipment necessary. If it goes into specific hybrid issues, they are highly specialized, and there's a high voltage flying around in there. So, you know, you need to be careful working on those systems.
But most independent repair guys will say, hey, look, this is beyond me. Yeah, you got to go to the dealer.
Yeah, and I've reached that on a lot of vehicles. If it gets too technical and requires too much special equipment and too much information, it's got to go to the manufacturer, to the dealer.
All right, the phone lines are loaded, Gordon. Let's get to them. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Paul in North Adams. Paul, you are first.
Afternoon. My question is about tire pressure monitoring systems.
Okay.
My current vehicle is 10 years old, so I'm thinking about buying a new vehicle this year or next. With my current vehicle, the best thing I ever did was put four brand new tires on it, because the tires that come with it from the factory are pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as I understand it, that there's a pressure unit inside the tire that the car reads, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. There are two systems, and the one that you just spoke of, each wheel has a pressure sensor in the wheel, and it sends.
It's in the wheel or in the tire itself?
It's actually incorporated on most vehicles in the valve stem. So you know where you add the air to the tire.
Uh-huh.
The other end of that, inside of the wheel and tire, has the sensor unit fastened to it. And
so, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so what that does is that reads the tire pressure, it also reads the temperature, and it sends a radio frequency signal to a computer in the car that then uses that information to alert you if you have a soft tire.
Is it a problem to put new tires on these Martin doohickeys.
No, actually the valve stem sensor stays with the wheel, and it can be resealed if the if there's corrosion or if the seals are in question or could be leaking air. And they do seem to last a long time. They originally thought the battery life in those was going to be about 6 years or so. I've had some cars come in 10 years old, and they're all still working.
Wow, amazing.
Oh, that's good. All right, well, thank you a lot, because like I said, I mean, when I first got the current vehicle, driving it downhill was like driving a toboggan, so I got new tires on it.
All right. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Chris in Sandgate, Vermont. Chris, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon.
Hello.
Good to talk to you. Well, I got to go in the Wayback Machine for a second.
All right.
I have an 88 Mercedes 300 SE, which has a straight six motor in it.
Beautiful.
Most dependable car I think I've ever had. However, I am not one to leave a car running, but I did leave it running just to run into a store because I knew I was going to be in there for a minute and a half. And when I did, the motor started screaming. Screaming bloody murder. It would rev way up to red line and down and up and down. Huh. And I don't know what the heck was going on. So I turned it off, and there was a mechanic next door, and I asked him, and he didn't have an idea. This has happened a few times since then, and this may be a coincidence. I'm not sure. But it would do it on startup sometimes.
Yeah.
And if I tap the brake, then... I could curtail it.
Yeah.
May have something to do with the cruise control, but I don't think it's a vacuum leak because once it's done, the car runs like a top, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten on the Mercedes forums, you know, like all the great forums on the internet, and I've never seen anyone else complain about this issue.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, and I know you're a German car guy, so... I'm crawling to you.
Okay.
Yeah. That vintage European car had a device that some manufacturers called different things, but it was called an idle air stabilizer valve. And if you remember the Audi 5000s of that vintage, maybe a little earlier, 84, 5, 6, 7.
Yep.
They had some problems where the cars were spooking people and they were allegedly running away or going unintended acceleration.
Huh.
And part of the problem was that idle stabilizer valve. And they were prone to going a little bit haywire. And I think that's what yours is doing.
Okay.
And that's able to increase and decrease the RPMs by quite a bit. If the engine's not in gear, it does seem like the engine's really screaming. It's not really ready to blow up, but it's more than what you would normally hear. And that valve on your car could be just getting tired, and it's not working properly. We used to clean those periodically with some air intake cleaner, and that could calm it down. So if you take it to a shop, explain to them what's happening. Tell them you're suspicious of the idle air stabilizer valve, and if they could look at it, clean up the throttle plates, check for vacuum leaks, all that normal stuff, and also fuel deposits can add to that stabilizer valve because it can't keep up with the engine maybe surging a little bit, tries to overcompensate. So put in a trusty bottle of Tecron at the same time,
yeah.
And I'll bet you that's what it's going to be on your car.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Chris. We appreciate the call. Now, if you had to replace that part, A, are they still available? And B, are they really costly? It's a Mercedes, after all.
They are still available, as far as I know. And back in the day, they were quite pricey for the unit because they were very specific to those vehicles.
Yeah.
I think you can still get them. It could be a couple $100 item.
Yeah.
But
what about installation?
Not bad at all. Pretty easy labor job on that car.
Okay. Let's try to get another one in before the first break. And Bruce in Del Mar. Bruce, you're up next.
I have an old Lexus 2002. Very good. Very happy with the car. It's The specified grade of gasoline is 91, which I think that's an octane number. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. How important is it to use that grade as opposed to using a lower grade and saving some money?
Very important.
Yeah, we get that question a lot. Higher compression engines are specifying 91 octane gas, and yours is one of those. We also see that specification on turbocharged engines because they're more highly stressed, and the higher the octane number on the gasoline, the more the resistance the gas has to pre-detonation and pinging, which can harm the engine. So there is a device in on your engine that's called a knock sensor, and it's listening for that, and it does make adjustments to compensate for poor fuel. So you could run 89, for example, but you may suffer a little bit of lacking performance and a little bit less miles per gallon because the computer is keeping things in check so it doesn't ping or knock. My suggestion is to run the octane that the manufacturer specifies, because I don't know if in the long run you're going to be saving much of anything because you could get slightly reduced economy on the other end of it.
Bruce, thank you so much for the call. We got to take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2016 season. Farmproject.org. Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of Asian-made and imports, specializing in late-model Volkswagen, Subaru, Audi, and BMW. AutobahnTechnic.com. Curran Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota, compliance consultants to the life insurance industry, announcing a symposium in Albany June 22nd through 24th. CurranCompliance.com. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. And Careers in Transition LLC, Dr. Tom Denham, providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn sessions, resume and cover letter writing. CareersinTransitionLLC.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is here, Ray Graff as well. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Greg in Pine Bush. Greg, you're on.
Hey, guys. I have a 03 Mercury Mountaineer. Right as it started to get down into the colder temperatures, really beginning of January, ABS light came on, and I've heard that it can be associated with the colder temperatures. I know there's an ABS sensor, and I was wondering if it's something I should wait out or try to look into replacing, and if so, are there one, two, exactly what's going on with that, if you could help?
Sure. Yeah, that's a very common situation because just about every car now has anti-lock brakes. That's what the ABS stands for. And most vehicles have one sensor on every wheel, so the computer knows how fast each wheel is turning. Did you say that was a Mountaineer?
Yeah, 03, yes, sir.
That may have three sensors. It may be just one in the rear on the rear differential. But in any case, the light can come on for any fault in the system whatsoever. So it certainly could be a wheel speed sensor, but it could be a bunch of other possibilities. And that system is designed to work regardless of the weather. The cold may have brought a problem to the surface. We get some ABS lights on only during heavy rain. So what you're going to need to do with that is get the system scanned to pinpoint the location of the problem. But like you said, it could be one of the wheel speed sensors or something related to the wheel speed sensors, but it needs to be checked because there's a lot to that system.
Okay, and in the last, I'd say, you know, once every four or five times I drive it, which it's not an everyday driver, it'll go out for, you know, 20 minutes or so.
Yep.
So
yep.
And then it pops back on. So okay.
I have a vehicle doing the same thing, and it is so random that I haven't really attempted to dig into it unless it's on more often. So I know what you're going through.
Right, yeah, I'm right there. So, all right, well, thanks for being there to field the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. We had a call from Joanne in Queensbury who could not hold on the line. She's on the road. Has a 16 Hyundai. It's a week old. Car wouldn't start. Roadside assistance couldn't come, it looks like. Talk about the lemon law. Joanne is ready to pull the trigger on the old lemon law.
Well, unfortunately, cars do this so infrequently now. I think if you turn the clock back 20, 30 years ago, having problems right off the bat probably wasn't that uncommon. But as far as if we get her back on the line, we'll see what the result was or what happened. But it's got to get back to the dealer, of course, and see what happens.
You would have to at least give it the dealer a chance to make good before the lemon law.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a legal thing. And I think it's three attempts to make a repair by the dealership and one attempt by the factory, you know, but it could be something really simple.
Okay.
Who knows?
All right, fair enough. This one came in via email from Jen in Pittsfield, who says, I have a 2007 Nissan Murano. When I make a left turn, there is a thunk noise in the front end. Well, that can't be good. It only does it when turning left, not right. It had a bad CV joint, which was replaced, but the noise continues. I was told the other one looks fine. For reference, much of the suspension has been replaced within the last year, including the ball joints, sway bars, and links, inner and outer tie rods. A few days ago, it also started making a creaking noise coming from the steering column, also when turning left. Any ideas as to the cause? And that's from Jen in Pittsfield.
I would avoid turning left.
Ah, nice.
That's not the right answer?
I don't think so.
She had a lot of work done to the front end of that car,
yeah.
Judging by that list.
Sway bars, links,
yeah.
Inner and outer tie rods, ball joints. It's a lot.
Yeah. Sometimes we'll see that after replacing various components like that, especially the control arms and things like that, the day they got installed, they might have been torqued adequately, but maybe some debris, rust, or junk got in somewhere where now there's something that needs to be retorqued or tightened.
Yeah.
In a case like that, you want to put a wrench to everything that was taken apart and check, make sure everything in the front end is tight. Make sure the subframe is bolted under the car properly. Make sure the strut connections and everything, that every nut and bolt is tight. And just rule out all that and then drive it and see what happens.
So bring it back to the place
The
repair.
Yeah.
Well, the thunk when turning left in the front end cannot be good.
It depends on how heavy of a noise it is, you know, what she's hearing. Every now and then we'll get a faulty part.
Yeah.
You know, we'll bolt it on and it won't be good right away. Or 3 days later, the car's back with a similar noise, and you find out that the part was defective.
Yeah, well, so, or they could do it completely wrong. Like, I went to a large chain to have some work done, to have an inspection last year on my wife's van, and they said, oh, you need new tie rods. Okay.
Yeah.
Did it. Had some work done around Christmas time. The guy said, oh, they put the tie rods on backwards. How about that?
That's not the best news.
No, it isn't. Now I have to buy new tie rods when I haven't inspected in March.
Fortunately, it wasn't something that fell apart on you while you were driving.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah.
But still, can you imagine? A well-known chain.
Mm.
I'd love to say the name, but I think I'd get in trouble. Let's go to Bonnie in Sheffield. Bonnie, you're on.
Hello. I wanted to know whether you agree with the advice I was given or you would do something additional. I have a 2006 Subaru Forester, and it had this, like, little, almost like a mouse sound when I shift into the different gears. I brought it in not to the Subaru dealer for the first time, and they went over it and said it is the throw-out bearing, but that I could easily go 10,000 miles before it needs to be replaced, and I was told it's about $1,000 job.
What's a throw-out bearing, Gordon?
Well, what Bonnie is experiencing is not uncommon to that vintage Subaru. And the throwout bearing, in essence, is when you step on the clutch pedal, the movement of the clutch pedal gets transferred to a unit called the throwout bearing, which activates the clutch. It engages and disengages the clutch with the movement of your foot.
Right.
And it's a bearing, so the turning of the flywheel and the clutch has to get taken up by something, so they use a bearing.
Okay.
And the noise that she's hearing is the throw-up bearing failing. And this happened a lot on this car. And I don't think you're going to be good for 10,000 miles because we have done a few of these just in the last 3 or 4 months. And the throw-out bearing, part of it is made out of plastic. And we're seeing that the plastic can't handle the heat and the load and the stress. And we've had them fail, I would almost say catastrophically.
Yikes.
Had one about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it disintegrated, and it broke up the clutch, and pieces of it pieces of it flew around in there. So, you know, I'm not saying you need to go do it immediately, but I think you should plan on doing that sooner than later because it'll leave you stranded. It's going to get real bad at some point, and then you may be on a flatbed.
Why make a part like that that is under heat and stress plastic?
Well, we see it. We're seeing it constantly. I mean, the use of plastics in cars today is incredible. In areas that you'd never dreamed you'd see them. Engine components, manifolds, this clutch throw-out bearing.
He told me that I would never get stranded with it. You're telling me.
Well,
and I'm on the highway a lot.
Oh, jeepers.
Well, the reason I say that is because we did have one. It basically came in. It barely made it in. It was trashed when we took it apart.
Wow! Now, would you go to Subaru for it, or would
necessarily? No, you can. You know, a good independent repair shop can do every bit as good a job.
What about the part itself?
You can
buy a factory part, or can you get an aftermarket?
You can get good aftermarket, and the aftermarket industry has solved the deficiency in that Subaru throw-out bearing. And if yours is, or if one gets too far disintegrated, they offer a on-the-car repair to take care of it so you don't have to spend giant money on a transmission case. So aftermarket's the way to go in this case if yours is damaged.
And is $1,000 an unreasonable expectation?
No, it isn't, because you got to replace all the clutch components, and you might need a flywheel while it's apart. So no, that's not an unrealistic number. In fact, it could go more than that. I don't think they factored in the possibility of needing a flywheel.
No, they didn't.
And you don't know that till you take the car apart, but you need to keep that factored in.
Whoa, thank you so much. Not for the bottom line, but for the reality check.
Yeah, that's true.
Bonnie,
thank you. Bye.
Bye now. 800-348-2551, the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest on Vox Pop. Dennis in Saratoga, you're up.
Hello. Yeah, I have a 2013 VW Passat diesel. It has 65,000 on it. It's 3 months. 3 years and 2 months old. Brought it in for service because it wouldn't fill up with gas easily. Always the pump keeps on clicking out. They did all the service code checks and stuff, and they said that I need a new gas tank.
Well,
$850 for the tank alone.
Is this at a dealer?
At a dealer.
It is at a dealer. Did I hear him correctly?
Did you say at a dealer or not a dealer, Dennis?
No, it's the VW dealer.
It is, okay. Yeah. The reason I asked that is because when you fill up a fuel tank, there are vents that need to allow the air to go out when the fuel goes in. And I've seen problems with different vehicles with that valving, which is not integrated with the fuel tank. But this car, it may be all together as one unit, and what's allowing the air to escape when the fuel goes in is not happening, and they may be saying the only remedy is a new tank. I haven't experienced that on that vehicle to tell you, yes, that's correct or no, it isn't, but it is certainly possible. But I think I would maybe just get a second opinion just to be sure, because that's kind of expensive.
Okay.
But you got to be able to put fuel in your car also.
Yeah, well, I can do it, but I got to trickle it. But then you're going so slow that it actually can overflow onto the, the pavement at the pump.
Yeah, yeah, definitely that valving is giving you trouble, because that's the other symptom, that when you reach the full mark, it doesn't alert the pump quick enough and the fuel comes out the top.
Interesting.
So you got,
right.
Yeah, I think they're telling you the truth, but it'd be nice to know if there's no alternative but a gas tank, you know?
Dennis, thank you so much for the call. This one came in via email, Gordon. This is from Bill, who says, I question the idea that lower octane gas will give you poorer gas mileage. Doesn't the NOx sensor simply adjust the ignition system to spark slightly earlier? This makes a slightly shorter piston throw, therefore less available power, but wouldn't that only be an issue during fast acceleration? How would it change the fuel economy if you're not driving like a teenager, in which case your fuel economy is in the toilet anyway?
Yeah.
That's from Bill.
Yeah, that's a very good bit of feedback right there. Let's say you've got horrible octane fuel.
All right.
Say you got a vehicle that requires 93 or 91.
Yep.
And you get terrible, terrible fuel. The onboard diagnostics, the NOx sensor, is going to say, wow, we're pinging like mad. And what it does is it retards the timing, backs it off.
Mm-hmm.
The further it backs the ignition timing, the less power the engine can develop. And it will require you to give it more fuel to keep the same speed or load if you're going up a hill. Say you're in a pickup truck pulling a load.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where your economy can decrease.
Okay.
Because the timing has been backed off too far. Your engine is running on lower power, so you're stepping on it to try to get it to do the same
Makes
amount
sense.
Of work.
Okay.
How much of that is you're going to lose in economy? It's pretty minor, but there is some loss there.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. And Grace in Sheffield. Grace, you're on.
Hi. This is Grace.
Hi,
yeah,
Grace.
Sheffield again. First of all, a comment on the sensors on the plugs in the tires, because the green caps that tell you you've got nitrogen in the tires,
yeah,
they just break. When I got my Mitsubishi, all the tops of all four of them were broken off, and then the salt and dirt got into the air valves. And,
yeah.
So, I mean, they're $60 a piece.
Yes.
That's yep. $240.
And they take a special valve stem yeah. cap with an O-ring seal
right.
in it. In a lot of shops, tire shops, mass merchandisers put the wrong caps on there, and then the salt gets in there and ruins the sensors. So you're absolutely right. And those green caps don't always have O-rings in them with the nitrogen. So, yes, very important.
So I've got all black caps on them. I just have to tell them it's got nitrogen.
Yep.
What I'm calling about is my Mitsubishi is a 2011, and I replaced the battery a year ago in January, and then again in November, and then, of course, Sunday morning after our delightful 19 below, it was dead again. I just got it back this morning, and the mechanic recharged the battery, and he can't figure out what's happening.
How often do you drive the car? Is it driven daily?
No.
How long?
I don't drive very far.
Yeah. How long can it sit without being driven? Days? Did it ever sit a week?
Just when I got sick, and that was November when it didn't work.
Yeah. I run into this occasionally on vehicles that get very limited use.
Yeah.
And short trips.
Right.
Because the energy used to get the engine cranking is a lot. Once
right.
once the engine's running, the alternator recharges the battery and gets it back up to
yeah.
snuff. But yeah. if you crank it, drive 2 minutes, shut it off, go in the store, whatever, crank it, drive back home, that battery, after a few sessions of that, is going to continue to go down in charge. So
right.
if your battery is at, let's say, 60% charge, and then it gets to be 20 below, you're done.
Doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and I've run into this on a certain number of vehicles where it's plain because the car doesn't get driven enough.
Yeah.
And doesn't get the right driving when it gets driven. So what do you do? I mean, you let a teenager borrow it or something?
Start it up and run it for 15 minutes?
Well, that's not as good because you're not, you know, the RPMs are just in an idle.
Yeah.
You know, it really needs to go out and get used, and the car needs to be used regularly. The only thing you can do, and I don't know how practical this is, but if you've got a battery tender, which clamps onto the battery, you can actually have one installed with a plug on the outside, and you can plug this in, and a little unit keeps that battery topped up 24/7.
Huh.
So your battery's always at the right state of charge. A lot of people do that with cars that they store, motorcycles off-season, snowmobiles, boats, anything that's not being used regularly. A battery tender is a great item to have.
It's a trickle charger?
It's a tiny, tiny trickle charger, but they're automatic. They're always watching, and they're not overcharging. They're not undercharging. They're just doing the right thing.
Okay. Grace, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551. John in Salem. John, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2010 Toyota Tacoma, and the other night the check engine light came on, and with that light, the traction control light, when you start to spin out, it lights up on the dash, came on as well. I stopped at one of the chain stores and hooked the diagnostic tool up, and it came up with the code P0031. I reset it, and sure enough, it came back on. But both of those lights stay on all the time. I'm wondering if you've got any advice on that.
Yeah.
P0031.
What did they tell you the description of 0031 was? Do you remember?
I went online, and it's a catalytic converter sensor. It's a sensor that's hooked to that. But nothing could I find that would make that the traction control light come on.
Yeah.
It was just the engine light.
Once in a while, well, I say once in a while, some vehicles, if the check engine light comes on, other systems get shut down because of the check engine light. I have not seen traction control. Subarus are commonly, if the check engine light is on, it turns the cruise control off, so you can't put the car in cruise control. So is it a result of your code? I don't think so, because traction control should be available at all times, whether the check engine light is on or not.
Yeah.
So I think you should get somebody to scan the ABS system traction control just to see if there's another code in there that the code reader at the auto parts store didn't pick up, because they're just going in there generically. So I would get it scanned where they got software to go into all systems.
All right, John, thank you. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. George Heigl Cowan's representative, accepting consignments of jewelry, fine art, historic firearms, American Indian art, historic items, and more. 518-369-7994. The Whistling Kettle, 130 types of tea, available online or at their Ballston Spa and Troy locations. New 2016 teas now in stock. Tasting flights now available all day. TheWhistlingKettle.com. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. And Interim Healthcare, celebrating 45 years in home care, supporting Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy's efforts to preserve the pine bush habitat for endangered species, including the Garner blue butterfly. MohawkHudson.org/pinebush.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Gordon, I got an email here from Teresa. I don't know what it means. I'll read it as written. I have no idea. I think there's maybe an emoji.
Subliminal
or
message?
I don't know.
No,
all right,
no.
So here it is. It looks like sort of a poem, if you can see. Line 1, 2004 Buick Rainier. Line 2, gas cap loose. Line 3, displays. Next line, what? Question mark. No problem detected. Message keeps coming back. It's a mystery to me. Here, I'll show it to you.
Yeah, did it say gas cap?
Yeah. No, I don't know if it said that. It says displays what? Question mark.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know what this means?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is, it's kind of cryptic, Ray.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is some haiku that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
This is a car thing. Go.
A lot of vehicles, if your gas cap is loose or you forgot to put it on at the gas station,
yeah.
the onboard diagnostics are constantly checking things.
Yeah.
So it runs a test and it finds out that there's a large EVAP leak. And the guess is maybe the cap is loose.
Right.
So a lot of cars will begin giving you a message to check your gas cap before it turns the check engine light on. So that's what I'm gathering
here. Okay, so the display does not say what, question mark.
No.
Because that would be weird.
No, but it will say gas cap. I don't know if it'll say gas cap loose, but it'll say check gas cap something relating to the gas cap.
And, of course, that could not be the gas cap and be something much more expensive, which we've
had many times. It is entirely,
but
they're saying before you do anything, just see if the cap is on tight.
Okay.
So I think that's what's going on
there.
Well,
you figured out Teresa's poem. That was well done. This is from JVBP. During the most recent cold spell, our low tire pressure icon illuminated. A couple of questions. One, did the cold cause reduced pressure? If yes, would ignoring the phantom problem be wise rather than adding too much air before the weather gets warmer? That's one.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's a very good question. And I think it was a guy named Bernoulli. Wasn't he the...
Bernoulli's principle. That's how they fly planes.
Yeah, and he had things to do with air pressure and temperature and all that. So if you put, let's say, 32 pounds of air in your tires and the temperature in the building that the car's in is 70, and then it hits 10, 20 below zero, they're not going to be 32 anymore. They're going to be less than that because the temperature decreased. So he should not ignore it. He should get the tires up to the correct pressure. And I'm sure that the test temperature is probably 68. Isn't that what everything is?
But his question is, what happens when the weather gets warm?
The pressure will increase proportional to the temperature increase, but his tires, and there's a threshold that this tire pressure monitoring system is allowing.
Okay.
So he's below the threshold, so he needs to get his tires back up to normal pressure.
Okay, and then the question number two, when the icon illuminates, how does one know which tire is the problem?
Some cars will tell you which it is, others
but
won't.
His.
But his probably won't. So you basically go with a nice, accurate gauge and go to every tire. And more than likely, they'll all be a little bit too low, but one's going to be lower than the rest.
Well, my wife's truck, it's been on for a while. The tires have been fine. I just had them checked. I believe it to be the spare.
Well, we've been through that on some vehicles, and that can be the tripping thing there, that the spare may have a sensor in it.
Too many computers, man.
Yeah.
Let's get away from that. Richard in Woodstock. Richard, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Listen, I have a 2006 Jaguar X-Type.
Good for you.
And I heard, it's my wife's car.
Oh.
And I heard someone else, another caller, say that this guy works on German cars. I cannot find a tire. 17 inches here, 7 spoke here.
Are you underwater, Richard? We can't hear you. You're on.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, try it again.
Okay. All right. I have a 17-inch rim, 7-spoke rim. And I'm wondering if this guy has one in his shop, because I'm being told it's like up to $250 to weld this rim.
Yeah.
And to buy one is like $300.
Yes.
And to even get one, it's like a 2-week wait time.
Why don't you go to eBay?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I had this same car. It was an 07 X-Type. This goes back maybe a year or two ago. Same thing, badly damaged wheel. And we had a hard time finding a replacement wheel for that car. And I know exactly what you're talking about, the 7 spokes. And there's a choice of several wheels that car could have on it. And we had a hard time finding that wheel. The only thing you can do is, are you searching for this yourself, or is it at a shop?
I'm actually, I'll add a comment here on your octane as far as the gas goes. I deliver gasoline. I go to gas stations all throughout New York State.
Okay.
All kinds of dudes all over the place. And I out of X amount of guys that I called today, they all gave me the same phone number of a junkyard in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm waiting for them to call me back. I called the junkyard up in Catskill. And to buy something, not even so much new, because the price for what they want for a new versus if you can find it used, but you can't find it used.
They are tough to find. I would look for a reconditioned wheel, and there are suppliers that offer them, and they are fixed, painted, trued, balanced. You know, they're as virtually a new wheel at a fraction of the cost of a new wheel. I'd look for a reconditioned wheel.
Richard, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to David in Cambridge. David, you're on.
Hi there, guys. For the sake of excellence in broadcasting, I'm talking to you on a telephone that dates back to the Eisenhower administration.
Oh, terrific.
Sounds great.
The audio quality
yeah,
is
you
pristine.
Sound better than the last guy.
It's made out of Bakelite.
Oh, very well done.
So, and I will probably continue to be an oddball throughout this conversation.
I believe it.
I'm the guy that's working on the roads here in Cambridge, New York, because I know what else am I going to do. And one of the fuels that I want to be able to use, those would be kind of a flex fuel sort of thing. And I would like the engine to run on algae. It's easy to scale up, and you can grow it in the desert, and there's a number of other reasons which can go on and on. And now the problem is the people who've been basically growing their own fuel, as it were, generally vegetable-based compounds for their Mercedes 240Ds, they're not awfully happy because now the newer Mercedes, the cars which are, shall we say, more digital, it's hard to get the computers to play nicely with this sort of thing. And the engine that I have in mind would probably, although they've got legal problems to sort out as we speak, would be the Audi engine, which would be the 2.0 turbo diesel 4-banger. And I'm premature because I'm still doing research as to how the timing should go to make this thing work properly. But even if I have that sorted out, I still have to convince said computer as to how to go about to doing this.
Yes.
And I imagine a lot of this stuff is proprietary. And the question, since you have more of a background in German cars than I do, what do I do?
Okay.
How does one, can you open the little black box and make a deal with the gremlins?
All right, hacking an Audi. Gordon.
No, it's if it was the latest model cars, they have proven are hackable because they're, these cars are getting information via the internet.
Yeah.
What year is your car?
I haven't built it yet.
Oh, okay.
It's the algae burner.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, the only thing you can do then is get the most recent version of vehicle that links up to the internet, and with some young hacker maybe in his 20s,
you can figure that out. Yeah,
I'm
talking to some kid who's got a background in code writing and who doesn't know that you can't do this, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So maybe he'll just go ahead and do it.
That's going to be your only option, I think.
I got to say, David, this is the most interesting call we've ever had on the car show. Thank you.
I'm glad to serve us.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. Hey, Gordon,
right.
Gordon, are there a lot of algae-burning roadsters out there today?
I don't know. I mean, if you dried it, and could you shovel it in like a coal-burning vehicle? Or
what about dead leaves? I mean, I could probably run my car on dead leaves.
If you went back into the 1800s, you could shovel anything into the boiler of a steam engine and burn
it. You see, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
You grow your own algae, you put it in the boiler, and okay, let's go to Bart in Malta. Bart, you're on.
Hey, guys. How you doing this afternoon?
Good.
Got a question for you. I'm looking at relatively new cars. I'm going to have to replace one fairly soon. And I'll give you four different cars, and I'm just curious as to your take. Toyota RAV4, Nissan Murano. Lexus makes a new one called an NX200, and a Volvo XC60.
Hmm.
They're all kind of small SUVs. I do a lot of my own, all my own maintenance and a lot of my own work. I've done catalytic converters, brakes, shock struts, even fuel lines, brake lines, things like that.
Yep.
Lexus is telling me, you can't touch it. No, you've got it. Our customers don't do that. And, you know, so they're the only ones that I've gotten really any pushback on. But I'm just curious, for an advanced do-it-yourself guy, I'm very familiar with Chevrolet, I'm very familiar with Nissan, but on the other three, what's your take? I mean, you know, I know every manufacturer does things differently, and they all kind of have their own styles and whatnot.
Yeah, that's a great question.
But I'm sure I could probably pick it up, but is there anything I'm looking at that's like a trap, you know, for a do-it-yourselfer?
The only area that anybody is going to get in trouble with is computerized components, which so many are now. But every car still has brakes that generate friction and wear, tires that wear, sooner or later steering and suspension components. All those cars that you just mentioned have all those things. And every car actually has the same stuff. It's just put together differently, configured differently, and serviced maybe a little bit differently. The higher-end cars tend to be a little bit more difficult to handle. So that would be your Lexus and your Volvo. The other two, the Murano, and what was the other one?
Oh, RAV4.
RAV4, okay. Those might be the easiest for a do-it-yourselfer to live with.
Yeah.
Because they're a little bit more basic and maybe a little bit more friendly in that sense.
You know, this is very, thank you, Bart. This is very strange because you say that there are computers that are proprietary. And so parts of these things have to be done by a dealer. But it strikes me that in the end, this is an antitrust issue.
Well,
monopoly. I mean, you should be able to work on a car.
Well, yes, but they're saying, for example, a shop like mine, they're saying that if you want to do everything to XYZ car, you may need $30,000 of special equipment, or you have to buy software, or you have to join you have to sign up and buy a certain amount of downloads. And that's where it gets so frustrating and so expensive.
So we have corporate attorneys who listen. I think that this is fodder for a fine antitrust case against all the big car manufacturers.
Well, I think they'll say, though, you're welcome to service this vehicle as long as you buy all this stuff to do it.
But if it costs $1 million,
right,
isn't that in practice a way of keeping out businesses?
You could be getting somewhere.
Got to do this thing.
Yeah.
Right. All right, this one came in. And by the way, we didn't ask Bart whether his car ran on algae. But I suspect.
Oh, we'll take a poll.
Yeah. This one's from Steve in Westfield, Mass. I've always checked the fluid level in every battery I have. I've always brought the cells up to the correct level with distilled water. Is this the correct method of keeping a battery up to par?
Yeah, it
still?
Is. Yeah. Well.
But they're all sealed now.
They went to what's called a maintenance-free battery. And
yeah.
The only thing they did differently is they made the battery hold more liquid. So by the time it evaporated down to the point where it was at the plates or below, battery was about gone anyway.
Right.
So you used to be able to take the caps off it and bring the liquid up to the
sure,
the correct
distilled
amount.
Water
and you
or
would
whatever.
Add distilled water because that's the only thing that evaporated out. So the answer to his question is yes, you still can do it. A lot of batteries are almost impossible to get the caps off to get to the cells to even put any liquid in them. So they've kind of evolved away from that.
All right, let's go get another quick call in here. Joe in Hoosick Falls, you got about a minute here, Chief.
Hi, I just wanted to talk about cam phasers on a 4.6 Triton engine. They're noisy, and I want to know about is there any additives or what should I expect for longevity?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, cam phasers on Ford V8s are a very sore subject for anybody that's gone through their failures. No, I wouldn't put any liquids or additives in it to loosen up what's in there. The only thing you can do is change your oil way more frequently and see if that calms them down.
Huh.
But that's a noisy engine to begin with because of that particular valve train that Joe was talking about. So my advice to Joe would be change the oil a bunch of times, way more often, and just see what happens. But I don't think I'd pour anything in it to loosen things up because it could plug those little screens and passages up, and now you got a cam phaser job on your hands, which is big, big, big work.
Okay. Big, in other words,
expensive,
big bucks.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Gordon Fricke, thanks for being here, my friend. Thanks to everybody who called in today. Sorry if we left you on the line. We do apologize. We get so many calls on this program. It's tough to get through them all. Support comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the Capital Region's National Natural Landmark with an interactive visitor center, guided programs, and 20 miles of trails, albanypinebush.org. Unusual Wedding Rings at Moore in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, specializing in wedding and engagement rings with a variety of jewelry for special occasions or everyday wear. UnusualWeddingRings.com. Bodhi Spa, Yoga and Salon Hudson, a full yoga studio offering classes in Vinyasa Yoga, Pilates, Hot Yoga, Prenatal Yoga, and Yoga Basics, open daily. BodhiHolisticSpa.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for all the great calls and emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a cheese show on Food Friday. Cheese. Cheese. Cheese.